Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, this is Ed Fallon, your host, and we're broadcasting from the heart of America's heartland, Des Moines, Iowa. And we've got content, of course, that is relevant to wherever you live in the U.S., as you shall soon see. Underwriting for this program provided by Gateway Market and Cafe, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan local and global foods and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Hey, our program's bumper music, as always, provided by the Des Moines Irish Session. I've got a lot to talk about today, but I got to start with this story about Jesus, all right? Now, I love Jesus. I studied Jesus in college. That was my major, basically. And there's a Jesus statue down there in New Mexico on the border between Mexico and New Mexico. It's 29 feet tall. It's a big Jesus. It's made of limestone. And it's basically standing in the way of where Trump wants to build his wall. And Trump and his company are trying to acquire the land through eminent domain. They want to take 14 acres of this land. I believe it's owned by, the Diocese of Las Cruces, maybe? Anyway, they want to take this 14 acres to build a 1.5 mile long stretch of border wall. And The diocese is challenging that in court, saying, you know, you cannot use eminent domain to take this because it would totally ruin what we have here. And what do they got? Well, they got a big statue of Jesus, but it's become a landmark, kind of a center for pilgrimage, and for about like 100 years now. So people are coming to visit this thing. They hike up the mountain. Literally thousands of people every year. Tens of thousands, even. They come up on Good Friday, on other days. And they've been doing this for a long time. And they argue that, the lawsuit argues that, you know, this threatens our pilgrimage site. And it contradicts Catholic values. And I love that. I love that they're putting that in there because, you know, thanks to Pope Leo and his predecessor, Pope Francis, it is pretty clear that what Trump is doing on immigration is contrary to Catholic values. Anyway, go Jesus statue, stand strong. I want to talk also about the First Amendment and whether it's time just to kiss it goodbye. And I say that with great fear and intrepidation. Big corporations, of course, and their big allies in government have been getting more aggressive about using eminent domain, not just to steal land away from Jesus statues, but to steal land for all kinds of purposes. I mean, we have fought that here in Iowa against pipelines. It's being fought all over the country. But right now, the First Amendment attacks are coming from all directions, or coming from one direction, but for all reasons. There was a group of Texas protesters associated with the very loosely defined group called Antifa. Remember, Antifa, it's not an organization. It stands for anti-fascist. It's just kind of a loose-knit collective. There are different people with different perspectives on how you organize and express yourself in Antifa. And some of the protest activity in this particular action at a detention center in Texas, I think it involves pretty poor judgment. So the demonstrators showed up at this detention facility late at night. Their plan was to set off fireworks, allegedly to let the detainees in the center know that they were there, that they were there in solidarity. I don't quite see how that works. Some protesters vandalized cars. They vandalized a guard shack. They also broke a security camera. And when a police officer arrived, he drew his gun and was subsequently shot in the shoulder by one of the protesters. The officer was wounded, not killed. He survived. Now, again, there's pretty much nothing in that protest that I support. And sure, the guy who shot the officer obviously deserves punishment. But, you know, life in prison. I mean, the guy's getting 100 years in prison, life plus in prison. For what? At worst, what? Attempted murder? You know, I get that that was wrong and there needs to be a legal response to that. But the other protesters, I'm going to quote from a Guardian story about this. The punishment for the protesters exceeds the lengthiest prison sentences given out for the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Enrique Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys, who was convicted of seditious conspiracy, was sentenced to 22 years in prison. And Stuart Rhodes, the leader of the far-right group, the Oath Keepers, was sentenced to 18 years in prison. End quote. And of course, not end of story, because what happened? Trump pardoned them and everyone else involved with January 6th. Anybody else see a double standard there? So, you know, this is regarded as kind of a test case for the Trump administration on how far it can go in, you know, trampling the First Amendment to squelching the, you know, freedom of speech. And it's the first case, but there are others, all right? There were 15 activists in Minneapolis who allegedly interfered with ICE. And there's also the situation in Washington State where a federal jury found 3 protesters guilty of conspiracy for participating in a protest last year at an ICE facility in Washington. So you see where this is leading, right? I mean, again, it's the fact that groups are being targeted just by virtue of their identity, actions that are, you know, in most cases, not, you know, historically, we wouldn't even be prosecuting them, you know, and yet they're being turned into very offensive crimes, enabling terrorism, you know? I mean, where's this going to go? Okay, I think about here in Des Moines. We've had several protests on a bridge over the interstate running through Des Moines, where a small group of people acting entirely peacefully, nothing aggressive or law-breaking or property-damaging about anything they're doing, merely holding signs expressing support for Palestine. And why will that not be called enabling terrorism by this administration, the way they're heading? Or for that matter, why not me? Why not somebody who has a talk show, who calls out injustices as he sees them or she sees them, and because they don't align with the administration's priorities and perspective, get labeled enabling terrorism? All right, so with that in mind, I'd like to talk about Israel. I put up a Facebook post last week, and it sure got a lot of traction. I'll read it to you. More Jewish leaders are speaking out against genocide. This from today's The Guardian. Dozens of Israelis from the security, political, and cultural elite in Israel have threatened legal action against their government over support for Jewish terrorism and an ideology of ethnic cleansing in the occupied West Bank. Again, ideology of ethnic cleansing, those are words used by these Jewish leaders in government, you know, in security, in the cultural venues of Israel. I thought it was a pretty tame statement myself. And again, most of the comments I got were favorable about it, in agreement. But there were some that just, wow. here's one, in all caps. There is no genocide, 3! The population of Gaza has soared. Do you know that 2 million, 25% of Israel's 8 million population is Muslim? They have full voting and civil rights. End of comment. Let's analyze that a little bit, all right? The truth is most Palestinians in East Jerusalem hold, quote, permanent residency rather than citizenship, meaning they can vote in municipal elections, but not for national elections. That's a big difference. That's a big difference. Also, I mean, Israeli law allows majority Jewish towns, even small ones, to reject applicants who want to live in those towns based on, quote, social suitability. So that limits where Palestinians can buy or build homes. And one more. In 2018, there was legislation introduced in the Knesset calling for Israel to become a state based on full equality for all citizens. Okay, seems fair, seems reasonable. The legislation was banned and never even debated, never even come up for a conversation. Okay, back to some of the comments that really troubled me from my Facebook post. Quote, the colonization of Israel by Romans, Christians, Muslims is over. We are back and we are staying. Got nukes, baby. You know, that's so disturbing. And it's so disturbing because it comes from a person that I considered a friend. Maybe still consider a friend. I mean, we have a lot of things we agree on. I thought this person would also agree that nuclear weapons could be a problem. Again, it's from a very liberal, quote, liberal Democrat and a former elected official. There are a lot of good comments. I want to share one of them with you. I see anti-Semitism everywhere. That literally in no way negates the genocide that is occurring. The entire world is covering it. You have to stand on your head and hold one eye in your hand not to see genocide. I agree that Hamas is not a good organization. I've never supported them, but they certainly lack the U.S. military's might. The Palestinian lands have been shrinking for decades. You have to very carefully handpick your info source not to see that. All right, so I love that comment. I think it's, and there were some people posted on my page who were like F you to the people who disagreed with me. I don't go in for that. Here's one that again, really disappointed. This is from somebody I considered a friend. I'm going to end our friendship on Facebook. Your post about Jewish terrorism directly endangers me and my family. I expect more from my friends, end quote. And I have no idea how a post I made sharing a news story endangers this person's family. I no idea. I think that's just a way to negate the value of what I had to say. Or in this case, really, what The Guardian had to say. I was just quoting The Guardian. Another comment here, only talking about genocide in Gaza, I think that means as opposed to genocide elsewhere, makes you anti-Semitic. Typically, there's not population growth during a genocide, and I'm not asking you to advocate for Palestinians. I'm asking you not to be an anti-Semitic F-word while you do it. I mean, I just don't know what to do with that. I have no idea what to do with that. So I'll leave you with this, again, from The Guardian. And there's other publications, plenty of publications that are making a lot of sense on this, including the United Nations and what they write. Again, the story in The Guardian concludes with, Israel continues to commit genocide but deliberately targeting Palestinian children in Gaza, according to an independent UN inquiry. Again, I think you'd have to just want to turn a blind eye to what's going on to come up with any kind of opinion that supports what the current Israeli government is doing. And maybe you could argue what Israeli governments have been doing since 1948. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about the SCOTUS ruling, the Supreme Court ruling on Bayer. So that was I don't know if people have paid attention, because a lot of the stories about this have not covered how the vote actually broke out. It was 7-2. So it wasn't the usual 6-3 Trump conservative appointees versus liberal justices, so-called. The two opposing votes were Ketanji Brown Jackson and Neil Gorsuch. Interesting. So, this is not just a Trump appointee problem. If you have trouble with the ruling, and I do, it's not just a Trump appointee problem. Again, the bottom line is this is about Roundup, produced by Monsanto, who is now owned by the German company Bayer. Roundup does not include any warning of potentially carcinogenic material. And Monsanto and Bayer deny there's any connection, any link at all. Yet plaintiffs have won about 10 Roundup trial verdicts. And some of those have been multi-million and multi-billion dollar settlements. But there have been over 200,000 claims filed, and many of them still pending. So I see why Bayer has come forward and tried to change laws about this and trying to get the Supreme Court to rule in its favor. And the CEO of Bayer, Bill Anderson, He praised the ruling for providing regulatory certainty to farmers and the herbicide producer. Read, in my opinion, the herbicide producer, not so much to farmers. But he says, quote, "This decision is good for American farmers who help feed the world. It provides the regulatory clarity necessary for innovators like us to develop the agricultural tools that guarantee an affordable food supply." All right, end quote. Food supply? I mean, I support Iowa farmers, but we're not growing food. We're growing soybeans and corn. Yeah, we're growing hogs as well and cattle. A lot of the hogs are being shipped overseas. But to say this is a ruling, this ruling is farmer friendly. Well, you know, farmers are a lot of the people who are suing because they're the ones who have been most directly affected by this chemical. But again, this decision is it's reversing thousands of jury awards to people who said they were harmed by Roundup. And again, many of them farmers. Now, to be clear, there is mixed opinion about whether Roundup is carcinogenic. The International Agency for Research on Cancer classified glyphosate as, quote, probably carcinogenic to humans. And it cites links to non-Hodgkin lymphoma, certain types of blood cancers. So the EPA, on the other hand, the US EPA, says it's safe, it's okay, you know. But I don't trust the EPA. I don't trust Congress. I don't trust the president, and I'm not saying just this president. I haven't trusted our presidents for a long time. This one is the worst, hands down, in my opinion. But you know, to say that if you want to weigh the EPA decision or recommendation on this versus a International Agency for Research on Cancer, I'm going to go with the latter, because the latter hasn't been lobbied to death like U.S. Congress. Again, just to put it in perspective, since 2024, in less than 2 years, Bayer, just Bayer, has spent nearly $20 million on federal lobbying efforts. So I don't see how this, I don't see how you can look at what's going on and say, hey, this is a ruling in favor of people and even in favor of farmers. And to drive that point home, what's happening here in Iowa is interesting and relevant to anybody who's concerned about this issue, because we have a gubernatorial race underway. Rob Sand, the Democrat running, Zach Lane on the Republican side. And both are criticizing this ruling. Zach Lane says this is not a win for farmers in any way. Lane said the decision strips people harmed by pesticides of legal recourse and undermines civil liability as a key part of the free market. And Rob Sand says, again, he's the Democratic nominee, he criticized the ruling, saying he would push federal officials to prioritize Iowans' health over big corporations, powerful insiders, or party bosses. He says about the decision, it is wrong, gross, and will continue to make life worse for Iowans. So I think it's fascinating. They're both leading candidates for the highest office in the state of Iowa. You know, a state where farmers, again, use a lot of this glyphosate. Yeah, but, you know, they're seeing what the problem is, and they're both coming out against it. Fascinating. Anyway, we'll see where that goes. Again, the ruling hurts a lot of people. And again, it's not just the Trump Supreme Court appointees that are the ones who ruled against people who are dealing with the impacts and effects of glyphosate. Back in a minute, and a reminder that underwriting for this program is provided by Dr. David Drake, a psychiatrist serving patients in Iowa and Colorado. More information at 515-229-5085.
Thanks to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. This is Ed Fallon, your host, and we're broadcasting from the heart of America's heartland, Des Moines, Iowa, with content important to you wherever you live in this vast country of ours. Hey, joining me is Mark Klipsham. Mark, welcome to the program.
How do you do, Ed? Glad to be here.
So we're going to talk about J.D. Vance, who I refer to as a puppet in waiting. And who's the puppeteer? Well, Peter Thiel. But first, I want to share a quote from David Sirota. I don't know if you know David Sirota. He's editor of The Lever. He wrote, "I don't find most political labels very useful. Left, right, centrist, moderate. They all mean different things to different people, and so they end up confusing the political discourse rather than clarifying it." I couldn't agree more. How about you?
We had a little discussion about this. For example, terminology. Some people equate conservatives with Republicans and liberals with Democrats. And I guess I call myself independent. I'm incredibly conservative, which has to do with the long-term implications of my actions, taking time to think about it. And then I see people call themselves Republican, and currently we're embracing very radical, rapid change, which to me is the antithesis of conservatism. So
how about the three congressional candidates and the five state legislative candidates who just won their primary elections in New York? They were all backed by Zoran Mamdani, the mayor of New York City, and they've been criticized by the establishment Democrats. 15 U.S. House Democrats signed an open letter saying, quote, "We are capitalists, not socialists. We are mainstream, not extreme. We are proud, not ashamed of America," which to me is like a total deflection from the reality of what issues were trying to be addressed in that campaign. I mean, how do you see it?
Well, I'm going to harp back on terminology. Capitalism, really? In New York City? No. We have corporatism. Winners and losers are picked every day. It happens to be convenient. Trump is pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into coal while shunning wind and solar. Yeah. And everybody wants it. You go like, let the market decide. Yeah. Why are you getting in here? That's not capitalism. Yeah. That's corporatism. You're subsidizing these things. Over and over, we have bailouts and subsidies for agriculture and businesses. It's like, that's not capitalism. That's socialism is what that is. So call it what it is. Oh, no, it's a horrible word. It's the S word.
Well, I mean, we have plenty of socialism in this country that a lot of people like. Social Security.
Yes.
Roads. The U.S. military. Public education, or at least what's left of it. You know?
Police. And of course, military.
Yeah, and socialism for the rich. That's like probably the most expensive price tag in terms of what we spend from the federal government on any particular activity. It's all the incredible amounts of money going to rich corporations and rich individuals. It's referred to as socialism for the rich, and I think that's a pretty accurate description.
And by the way, that scale issue is what allows for, if there is fraud, it seems to be a wonderful word that's thrown bantered about. You can get away with that when you have a huge scale. Mm-hmm. You know, is Bob or Susie really handicapped? Do they really need that Social Security? Do they really need that Medicaid? Well, you can hide all kinds of places in a country of 400 million people. Whereas if it's a community, it's like, no, I saw him. He had a new car, and you know, he's drinking good booze and this kind of stuff. I don't know where he's getting the money, But you go like, something's not right. When you're in a
Right.
huge
You can't
country like that, all kinds of stuff can happen.
you can't get away with that on a small scale.
No. And I'm going to harp back on the Amish again. I think they're 100 years ahead of us. It's like everybody knows, there aren't any secrets. It's like there's no scandals. Well,
Well,
they're
maybe
not real
depends.
big.
I think where there are human beings, there will be scandals. But yeah, I mean, right now we've got something that seems to be agreed upon by most people on the across the political spectrum is that well, we've got what 989 billionaires in the U.S. and they own more than what 9.2 trillion, and and their wealth is up 31.8% since 2025. That's according to the Americans for Tax Fairness report. You know, most people are appalled by that. And yet, you know, somehow Republicans have gotten away with pretending that they actually care and that they plan to do something about it, and they're not doing anything about it. And Democrats have just not even, I mean, they've given up trying, it seems. But now we have this new wave that seems to be making some headway in terms of reaching the average person's, you know, addressing their concerns about this income consolidation within a handful of very wealthy people. So,
I don't see how you can do that in a capitalistic society, because a capitalistic society you have competition. And by the way, the game is who can get the biggest pile of money that I don't need. And what would I do with $1 billion? That just seems, I don't get that. And by the way, it seems to turn people kind of mean and crusty. But once again, competition, you see someone like that, someone's going to come along with a better way to slice bread or whatever. And they're going to compete with them. They don't have competition anymore. They are protected. They have a captive audience. It is corporatism. Someone has picked them as a winner. Someone has picked people as losers.
Yeah.
That is not capitalism.
No, and that's it, the whole conversation is just off track. But
Disingenuous.
here we have these 15 House Democrats saying we're moderates. And that sounds good because everybody wants to be moderate and
Yeah.
reasonable and balanced, right? But what they're really saying is our alignment is with the interests that have helped get us to be in Congress. And we know that those interests are not, you know, in line with what most people want. They're not the interests that are going to push for a tax on billionaires, for example, with like we see in California right now. So I mean, how do you see the message coming out of New York, the primary in New York? Do you see that as resonating broadly across the country? I mean, that's what Mamdani and the folks are there saying. Our message is not one that's unique to New York. It's one that will resonate with people coast to coast. Do you think are they dreaming? Or are they accurate?
I'm gonna back up a little perspective here. Like, if I were king, and for some reason I somehow got elected president, day one it would be okay. Yeah, day one, I want to talk to all the leaders in the world. There's plenty of money. There's plenty of resources. We got wars. We got strife. We got famines. Why are we doing this? This is insane. I don't know about socialism, but I want everybody to be happy. I don't want to hear on the news about how people are starving and being imprisoned and tortured. Is this the world we want? Why are we doing this? I live in the microcosm of Iowa. We live in a toxic cesspool biodesert. I know why. It's because Big Ag came in, got rid of all the diversity, funded all the campaigns, liberal, Democrat, moderate, whatever. They are beholden to them. And by the way, now that it's election time, we're all of a sudden worried about water quality. It's like, well, really?
Well, we
We
ought
have
to
a lot
be.
of time to deal with this. It hasn't been
Every
going.
place in the country ought to be concerned about water quality, but in Iowa, it's connected to the fact that we are what the second highest state in the country for cancer and the only one with a growing cancer rate, I believe. But you know, I want to ask you this, Mark. I think our criticism, I mean, we're not exactly on the same page. I think we're close, and I think our criticism is applicable to Democratic and Republican administrations. Probably more so under this current leader than ever before. But, you know, I know a lot of people, they only focus on Trump. If we can get rid of Trump, everything will be wonderful. I don't see that as be, I think that's, That's delusional. You have J.D. Vance in the wings, and who put J.D. Vance in power? Well, Peter Thiel. He's the venture capital, millionaire from California, and his views are extremely anti-democratic. I mean, he is vocally and clearly and outspokenly anti-democratic. And this guy, I mean, I see J.D. Vance as more dangerous than Trump because he's less off the wall. He's he's less uncontrolled. But also he's a puppet to this guy who basically is fine with ending democracy.
Miller, same thing. You know what the base of the Statue of the Liberty says? Bring us your downtrodden, your it's asylum seekers. And that the United States is now closed to people. Oh, you mean to tell me we're not going to these other countries to free them from their horrible conditions? It's like that is so incredibly disingenuous. And he's another Heritage Foundation operative.
You mean Stephen Miller, the
Right.
whatever the other puppeteer.
Well, useful idiots. The end that I foresee from history is not good. Vance, on the other hand, is so unattractive. I don't care what he looks like. People just don't like him. I don't like him. He just seems so nasty and mean. Trump has this kind of hypnotizing preacher voice, and we're gonna do this. Da, da, da. Vance, on the other hand, just mean. I don't. What happened to him?
And Trump is not mean.
Like I said, he's got the circus barker, the con man thing going, the preacher thing. He mesmerizes people, not me,
No, and
but
I think J.D. Vance has the same capacity and will refine that over time. The poor guy who was used to be an atheist and came to his senses and became a Catholic. Again, what's important is who's behind the scenes.
came to a path, came to a Catholic and disparages the Pope.
Right, exactly. Yeah, well,
What?
But I mean, I just see that it's the man behind the curtain. And again, you point out Stephen Miller. Good point.
The Heritage
I think,
Foundation is the man behind the curtain.
yeah, and again, Stephen Miller, the Heritage Foundation, Peter Thiel, they're all one of the same mind in terms of their philosophy of government. And it is emphatically and clearly and statedly non-democratic. It's anti-democratic.
Well, and the part that really, really scares me is it sure seems like they thought that the warning about the apocalypse was the game plan. Let's burn fossil fuels. Let's have wars. Let's just be mean. We're going to send people back to countries that they wouldn't want to step in for one second. The asylum seekers, TPS. It's like you're going to send those people back to there. That you're Christians? I don't get that at all. Once again, terminology. We're Christian. Well, please act like what Jesus taught. I would be totally on board with that. And I'm not seeing that at all.
Yeah, and one thing with Peter Thiel, I mean, he's basically he maintains that human technology and science have slowed down. He champions what's called, quote, definite optimism, this idea that humanity can only be saved from collapse by visionary pioneers undertaking these massive engineered breakthroughs, and that's all connected to a kind of a an apocalyptic view of human existence. Yeah.
Or instead of having more people, we could decrease our population back to where we could actually have capitalistic societies and communities as opposed to huge hives.
Yeah.
By the way, the Harris thing, if she had won, my take is we would just have a slower decline. It'd be a nicer decline, but ultimately we're going to end up in the
Kinder
same
and
place.
gentler decline. I like
Yes,
that.
exactly. I was like,
Yeah.
it's Rome. We are Rome 2.0. We consume way more than we need. We're little Twinkie princesses. No, we are.
Yeah.
And the people like in Iran, just in this, it's like you're talking about people and people's lives and people's countries. And if
Well,
anybody did that to you, you would be absolutely outraged. But you blithely say, destroy their civilization and kill everybody.
Mark,
It's like,
I got to run to a break, and I think Twinkie Princess is a great note to run to a break on. So, Mark Klipsch, folks, thank you, Mark, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Back in a minute, folks, an underwriting provided by Dr. Kim Holding with Story County Veterinary Clinic, serving Story County pets for over 30 years. More information at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Circle of Peacemakers. Formerly the Catholic Peace Ministry, Circle of Peacemakers works with people of all faiths toward a world without war. CPM opposes runaway military spending while domestic needs go unmet. Instead of endless wars, CPM supports diplomacy. Visit circleofpeacemakers.com. At Westrum Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrum and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrum's primary concern. Dr. Westrum and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Hey, welcome back to the Fallon Forum. This is Ed Fallon, your host, and we're broadcasting from the heart of America's heartland, Des Moines, Iowa. Hey, underwriting for the Fallon Forum provided by real estate agent Joe Henry. More information at 515-208-7312. Hey, I would like to welcome Sam Daly Harris to the program. I just met Sam this minute, but I'm aware of a book he wrote that I think is pretty important and pretty interesting, and it's called Reclaiming Our Democracy, Every Citizen's Guide to Transformational Advocacy. So, Sam, that previous conversation with my earlier guest was not exactly uplifting. So you're here to uplift us. What can we do in this very, very challenging time?
Okay, well, you know, when I talk to folks, I usually lay out the stuff we know first. In other words, protest, critically important, lawsuits, very important, motivating voter turnout, critically important. My area is a fourth that few people know about, transformational advocacy, where you work to change an issue and you're changed in the process, not the transactional advocacy of sign the petition, transaction complete. But transformational advocacy is where you're trained, encouraged, and succeed at doing things as an advocate you never thought you could do, like meet with a member of Congress and bring them on board to your issue. And when you do that, you see yourself differently. You see yourself in a new light. I don't know if you want me to give an example.
Well, what if you meet with that member of Congress and they ignore you, as so often happens?
Right. So when I'm coaching a group that's meeting with a member of Congress who opposes their bill, I have them ask three questions. One, we know you don't support this bill. What would it take to change your mind?
And they say big contributions that match the ones I'm getting.
Oh, okay. Then second question, could you say more about that?
Me?
Third question.
Oh, I see right there.
Yeah. Why do you think, what would it take to change your mind? Could you say more about that? Why do you think that is? And I tell you this little story. I was talking to a friend. It's a longer story, but he's meeting in a couple of weeks with his member of Congress, who's a MAGA Republican in North Carolina. And he said, and his focus is on global and domestic poverty, my friend, as is mine too. And he said, you know, I read on Facebook where the congressman met with the Rotary Club and they talked about eliminating polio around the world. So I know that's one thing I'm going to talk to him about. And when he, just before he was sworn in 2023, we met with him and we talked about the child tax credit. And he said, I can relate to that. I grew up with a single mom. We had our car repossessed. We had the electricity turned off. So this is my friend who knows he's going in to meet his MAGA Republican, but he's looking for an entry point here or a route in there. And this is not about a one and done. This is about building a relationship. So
And so, I mean, in my experience, you can sometimes find that link with a member of Congress, and then beyond that link, they get kind of turned off to wherever you want to take them next if it's not something that they're comfortable with. And I can speak about that from the other point of view too. I was a legislator for 14 years, and I was always critical of gambling, especially the state lottery. I didn't like the state, running this what I thought was kind of a scam program. And the head of the lottery knew that I was really laid back and didn't wear a tie, so he wanted to come. He came to meet with me in jeans and a shirt, and he talked about his fondness for Ireland because that's my second home. And we had a great conversation there. And then he got into details about what he wanted me to support relevant to the lobby. And my view didn't change at all. I was glad to have the conversation about things that we had in common. So, I mean, maybe it works sometimes, but for me, on me, it didn't work. And I've seen where it doesn't work on members of Congress, but maybe you've got examples of where it does work.
Well, let me I'll give you a couple, but let's start with this one. So it's a longer story again, but the head of organizing for climate change for the United Church of Christ in the United States, I started coaching him in a tiny team the month Trump was sworn in the second time, and they started their first four chapters 2 months later, a year ago March. I think they're up to about 15 chapters right now. The point is, what they started to work on was President Trump called for a 55% cut to the Environmental Protection Agency. And so they were lobbying to avoid this cut. Now, when they started last August, they had maybe nine chapters, and then they had their 11th last November. But they got dozens of letters to the editor published, always with the congressional switchboard phone number in their letters, somewhere in the Boston Globe. They had a dozen or so meetings with congressional offices. They had four op-eds published. And in late January, President Trump signed a bill that cut the EPA by 3.5%, 16 times smaller than his proposed 55% cut. Now, they know that they're new and they weren't the ones who did all this, really, but they were in there. Their letters that were published and the letters they wrote that weren't published, they know that they're part of the action. And so that's an example of, again, I'm not going to pretend this brand new little outfit of a small number of chapters made this change. But they didn't feel like they were just standing on the sidelines watching a car crash, but they were in there trying to get something done. I could give other examples too.
And I agree with you. I think I subscribe to a quote by Mahatma Gandhi, attributed to Mahatma Gandhi, that every little thing you do, even if it seems insignificant, it's very important that you do it, because you never know. I've seen this before. I've looked out at trees as they get covered by snow, which is a very refreshing thought here on a 90-degree day in Iowa. At some point, there's one snowflake that falls on that weak branch and it breaks. And are you that snowflake? I know snowflake has other meanings, other contexts in the political realm, but to me, that snowflake is a pretty powerful thing. And again, what you're talking about is, being that one person that might at some point push somebody over to take the action that you really want them to take.
Yes, and then the question becomes, how do you stick with it to be that perhaps that snowflake and not give up and throw your hands up kind of thing? And that's why, if I can, when I'm urging people to what to look for when they're looking for an organization that works to deliver transformational advocacy, I have them look for three things. One is recruitment and community building. They bring new people in, not just to build an e-blast list, but to form them into local chapters so you're not working alone. And the community building might be a monthly whole of organization webinar with guest speakers, Q&A, inspiration, recruitment and community building. A second ingredient is training. How do you get the meeting with the elected? How do you plan for the meeting? What do you ask for in the meeting? The third is breakthroughs. The organization actually encourages their members to have breakthroughs, to do things they think they can't do. And there's a drawing in Reclaiming Our Democracy, a small circle labeled Your Comfort Zone. And right next to it is a much larger circle labeled Where the Magic Happens. And so you need to find an organization that will encourage you out of your comfort zone and then help you stick with it, rather than I tried once and it didn't work and I'm out of here.
And what where do you put political action in the spectrum of things that one might engage in to make a difference? By political action, I mean helping a candidate that you like who's running for office, running for office yourself, that type of engagement. Where do you put that in the
Well, I'm
process?
critical. I mean, again, when I was saying protests, lawsuits, and motivating voter turnout, all critical. Now, some people might do two of those or one of whatever. You have to decide. What we can't decide is to stay out. And if I could give this example, I talk about the American slumber party. When Miami, Florida voted its first Democratic mayor in nearly 30 years last December, the voter turnout was 21%. 79% stayed home. When Mamdani was elected mayor of New York City, the largest voter turnout since 1969, the voter turnout was 42%.
That's really
58%
high.
stayed home.
I
Yeah,
know
well,
it's crazy,
okay.
but it's really high compared to what you, I mean,
I
it's a shame
understand,
that that's high, you know?
but more people stayed home than
Sure.
voted in terms of, yeah. So we have this American slumber party, and we have to decide whether we're going to join into that or join in the waking up.
Well, very good. And as a fellow author, I know how tough it is to write a book, so congratulations.
Thank you. Yes.
And yeah, again, the book you wrote is called Reclaiming Our Democracy: Every Citizen's Guide to Transformational Advocacy, and it's available at local bookstores
It
or through
is.
the author directly.
And the only other thing is that reclaimingourdemocracy.com, there's a sign up to learn more where people can let me know they'd like my help in connecting them with one of these organizations that I've been mentioning that delivers
And what
transformational
is that
advocacy.
website?
Reclaimingourdemocracy.com.
Got it. Reclaimingourdemocracy.com. All right. Hey, Sam, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Folks, we've been talking with Sam Daly Harris. Back in a minute, and a reminder that underwriting for the Fallon Forum provided by Westrum Optometry. More information at 515-789-3055.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Underwriting for this program provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan local and global foods and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thanks, and I'm excited to talk about our topic today.
Yeah, I, as people who listen to the show regularly know, I'm very much Irish. That was my second home. Growing up, it still is. I have a forest there on our family's land, and land that goes back to the 1800s. And we went there to reconnect with cousins we haven't seen in a long time. and also to see how the trees are doing. They're now 26, well, some are 37 years old, others are 26 years old. And agriculture, though, has changed quite a bit in Ireland.
Even since the last time we were there, which was 2018, and Ed, I've heard so much from you about your Irish experience growing up, and then when I first met your cousins and again got to see them this time, I'm glad you've got them because all of my people over there are dead, I think.
Dead or unknown.
Unknown. I'm sure they're
Yeah.
all over the place. Hey, Burns family,
You're
if you're
listening.
Irish Burns.
Yeah. But yeah, when I was a kid there, and even into the 80s, everybody grew potatoes. Every family had cabbage and carrots and lettuce and other vegetables. Nobody had tomatoes. You can't really grow tomatoes in Ireland unless you're doing it in a polytunnel, you know,
Greenhouse thing,
greenhouse.
yeah.
So, but it has changed so much, and it's a little sad to me. Actually, it's a lot sad to see that those traditional types of of people sustaining themselves have been traded in for, you know, paychecks and purchasing food at local markets. Again, that said, Ireland is still very much it's much more I want to say old-fashioned than we are. You know, they don't have these huge mega stores. There are Walmarts in every town.
When we went to Sligo, we saw a McDonald's
That's right,
and we
yeah.
saw I forget a Best Buy or so. I forget what
Really?
it would,
Well,
maybe not a Best Buy,
yeah.
some box store.
Yeah.
And it made me sad, but the
Yeah.
thing I really appreciated about visiting, and we stayed in County Roscommon, which is
The best county in Ireland.
also sort of the Iowa of Ireland.
Minus the good soil.
It's mine, but they do it. They do, boy, the grazing is
Grazing
fantastic.
great.
And what I liked so much was that the heart of Ireland is really, really strong there, meaning that people connect with each other. They stay connected with each other, with their families, with their friends, with their neighbors, and in the rural spaces, where it's pretty much where we spent all of our time, people knew what their neighbors were up to and could contact them at a moment's notice. We had the fun experience where your cousin Kathleen and her
Olivia,
family
Michael,
live.
yeah.
We went out to get the car ready to go, and there were six cattle on the road, and I felt like I was back in Southwest
It is a
Iowa.
small road,
Yes.
and the funniest part, we blocked their passage, and while my cousin tried to figure out whose cattle they were, and while she was trying to figure that out, they started eating her plastic flowers.
Right off the fence. Right off the fence.
Nobody should ever have plastic flowers. Sorry, Kathleen.
Oh, but
But
they're a very bright spot
well,
on the
and the
fence,
cattle
Kathleen.
thought they were good, but they did kind of give up on them after a
Spit
while.
them out. I was worried they would choke. But it was so fun. So I felt like I was back in rural Harlan, Iowa, or even rural Jasper County, and I've spent most of my life in rural places. Cattle get out, sheep get out. You've got to figure out whose they are, get them somewhere safe, and it's actually was a lot of fun to herd those cattle into the pasture.
Well, we actually herded them into the wrong field.
Well,
We didn't know any better.
she
We
never
were,
found out whose they
yeah.
were yet.
We thought at that point that they were connected to that farmer, but
Okay.
wrong field. Anyway,
That was a lot of fun.
yeah.
And speaking of the cattle, your other cousin, Claire, and her family, they have a farm, and they recently had two different baby calves, one little boy calf and one little girl calf. So guess what their names are now?
Ed and Kathy,
Yes.
guess which one's going to be marketed after about 2 years?
Little Eddie doesn't have as long a lifespan as
Right,
little Kathy.
right.
So it was great fun to just drive around the countryside, and yes, those roads are narrow, and visit people, and we visited so many people. And then one of my favorite experiences was, because I had never done this the last time we were there, was just go out for a pint at the local pub. And
There's a
not
lot of pubs.
a
This is the
lot of
one that's out in
pubs.
the country,
Yes, it's just on a country road.
near our family's farms, homes. Yeah, and it was great. And they had a nice, the piano was in tune. That was
And you
awesome. I
got
got
to
to play that,
play.
yeah. Yeah, and then I played some Irish stuff, some improv, and I played a Chopin nocturne. And the bartender said, "That's the first time we've ever had a Chopin be performed here in a pub."
That's right.
Anyway, we had a great time. But, you know, I was sad to see agriculture having changed so much, and that point was kind of driven home when we went to get back on the plane. And we'd had a hard time getting tickets on this plane. In fact, we were not able to get seats together.
We were on opposite
sides of the plane. And who do we blame for this?
Farm Bureau.
True story.
They were all on a, I will call it a field trip. Some of the members and a guest were dozens and dozens of them, and there were numerous planes
over 100 on our plane.
Iowa Farm Bureau folks.
In Iowa and other states.
And
too,
other states,
yeah.
Okay. And I sat next to one of them on the plane. I think you might have too, but
yeah, I did. I had my own Farm Bureau couple that I sat next to.
Well, this lady told me
very nice people
about the trip that they took to a potato farm, and I thought, oh, good, people are growing potatoes, and it was a giant industrial potato farm in Tipperary. Where they, I don't even think they were allowed to go where the potatoes were growing because of some security thing or
biosecurity. Yeah.
So that to me struck me as not very Irish at all, where they're growing the, but you have to have potatoes, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, but it's a shift. I mean, you know, there's always, and you have this everywhere, talk about what are we going to do to create jobs?
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the place that I, you know, where my uncles are from, where I spent time as a kid and where we still have trees. And they used to be, it's a hamlet of about maybe 10 homes, I think. Mm-hmm. And there used to be 20, 25 jobs, of people who had jobs working.
In that tiny area.
Now there's one.
And
one
there's,
left.
And there's about one resident left, too.
Well, yeah, I said one resident, one job. And, you know, so we've traded, it's a trade-off. You know, we've created new jobs in data centers, maybe, but we've lost all these jobs in rural communities, and that's not unique to Ireland at all.
Yeah. It's happening here, too. Anyway, it was a great trip, Ed. Thank you for sharing your family with me once again.
Well, I'm just glad you behaved yourself for a change.
Well, I try.
Hey, thanks, Kathy, and thanks to our guest today, Sam Daly-Harris, also Mark Clipsham. Thanks to our production team is Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dederman, Charles Goldman, and Kathy. Thanks also to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Underwriting provided by Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Westrum Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Also, Circle of Peacemakers, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. This is Ed Fallon, your host, and we'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.